share with you this morning some things that I have hopefully half learned. I don't think I'm there by any manner or means. I am very sorry that Carol is not here this weekend. She is normally with me. And we've just been on the road an awfully lot. We've been in Pennsylvania and Indiana and Colorado Springs and been traveling in 3 or 4 or 5 days in each place. And our youngest son, who's at Azusa Pacific University, is coming home for the weekend, probably to get his clothes washed and a few other things. And so anyway, Carol felt she needed to be there. Plus, my wife is running tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, is running her first half marathon. And so she's really fired up about that. And it's a little dingy to my thinking, but anything over 3 miles is strange to me. But she is into a little more distance than that. And so she's got a few things this weekend that were pretty important in her thinking. And so she is home to do several of those things. But we have had a super 28 years. And there have been some difficult times in there. And there have been some giant hassles here and there. And, we certainly, I would not want to stand here and say, well, now, if you'll listen well this morning, I'll show you what the great marriage is all about. I think our marriage is excellent. I think it's very, very good. I look back on what we got married on that we call love, and it's a little spooky to me. I didn't have a whole lot about what was going on when I said, I do. I really didn't know what that meant. I think had I known, I probably wouldn't have done it. But as we've grown together and been through some struggles and hassles and all of those things, I think I've learned some things that have been helpful. I think there are a lot of things that were problems in our lives 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that are not problems now. We've got new problems. And that's kind of the nice part of growing together and being married. I think marriage is instituted by God. I don't think God's ever changed his mind about marriage. I think when you say I do to someone and you make that commitment till death do us part, that's exactly what God intends that to be. Now, if you're here and you've been through a divorce and you're in a second marriage, don't sit here this morning and get a big guilt trip. God has his forgiveness and he's concerned about how you work with where you are right now. But I don't think God's ever changed his mind. We live in a day when our society has made divorce easy. It's very easy to walk out. I can look back. I remember as a boy in Indiana, in a rural community, I can remember when a couple in our church was thinking about getting a divorce, and that became known. And I can remember an evening when our whole church gathered together and spent an evening together praying for that couple that they would not divorce. That is not true today. Divorce is like buying another cracker. I mean, it's just like that. And yet I don't think God has ever changed his mind about marriage. I don't think he's ever altered the issue of marriage in Scripture. I want to try to do something this morning to just get you to think through some things. I want to use a passage of Scripture that probably you've not heard used with marriage because it's not directly tied to marriage. But I think it's a great passage that has an awful lot to say about our relationships within the structure of our marriage. Before I read it to you, if you want to turn to Ephesians 4, do that. We're not going to work with Ephesians 5. So don't freak out and say, here we go. I want to work with a little different passage this morning. But let me just say 4 or 5 things. I wrote down 5 things. A lot of times people see me, particularly at Forest Home, because I have now hosted family camps at Forest Home for the past 12 years. And people see me on the platform, and they see me kind of joking and having fun and kicking back, and people will go to my wife and say, is he really always like that? And Carol will smile, because I'm not. I am a very private person away from the platform. I do not like people in my house. I like my family in my house. And I don't like other people there. I like a private home. That's been a big thing in our marriage. My wife, if we got 40 people for dinner, she's thrilled. She's having the time of her life. And I'm waiting for them to go home. And I tend to be a very private person away from the platform. And Carol smiles because people say, is he always so up and fun and laughing and making jokes, you know? Carol said, no, not really. He's a lot different than that, you know. But one of the things that strikes me, and I just wrote down 5 things. We are not still together, and we are not still in love after 28 years because, one, we're just simply great people and we have it all together. And it just works out. Marriages do not just work out. I don't know anybody's marriage who just works out. It takes a lot of effort. Secondly, because we had great premarital counseling. Our premarital counseling consisted of 2 minutes of a bad joke. And that's about the extent of our whole premarital counseling time. So that really did not do a great deal for our marriage. Thirdly, we are not still together because we are in the ministry at Forest Home, and that makes it all perfect. That ministry has created a lot of trauma in our marriage, and so that's not the issue. We are not still together and in love because we have 2 neat kids. I think we have two neat kids, but they have caused a lot of trauma in our marriage. And, you know, we've got a 25-year-old that is a school teacher and married to a delightful lady, and we got a 19-year-old who has scared us to death for the last 18 months. And now it's kind of getting some things together, but we've spent a lot of time crying and praying over that kid because he's just had no direction and he's done some weird stuff. And at 19, you can't beat him anymore. You know, you can't say, hey, dummy, you just got to hang in there and believe what you've taught him is right and good, and he's starting to pull out of it now. But that's not really the issue. Fifthly, we are not still together and in love because we have great personalities and I'm always up. I am not always up, and neither is Carol. But I just say to you this morning, as we start this little passage, we have had our share, I believe, of conflicts. We have had some grief in our marriage and in our life. We've had arguments that have been major at times. We've had some great disappointment in some areas of anticipation. We have had stress in our marriage. We have had illness in our marriage. I have had two major spinal surgeries. We have had debts that we're going, how do we get out of this one? We've had just kind of the normal things that hit people. And our lives have not been a whole lot different than a lot of your lives. And yet, as I look at our marriage right now, we just were in Pennsylvania, and we were sitting in a hotel room in Pennsylvania. And I don't get this way often, but once in a while I get terribly sentimental, and my wife is not sure whether to cry or laugh. And I sat on the edge of the bed, and we were sitting in the room, and I just started telling Carol why she was important to me. Because she is the most important human relationship I have in the world. And she's an incredible woman. She really is. She does a million things. I watch her and I kind of go, how does she do all of that? She starts at a weird hour in the morning. She's up and gone running at 5:30. And I just kind of go, that's crazy. People do not function at 5:30. But Carol does. And she's involved in our community and some wonderful things. And she is an absolutely delightful person. And yet I want to tell you something, and I say this to the men, I have at times in our marriage reserved absolutely my worst behavior for her. I've done that. I have come home from a day when I would have never spoken to anyone at the office the way I will speak to her. I would have never done in my office what I will do in my house when it comes to my attitude. A guy who spoke at Forest Home about 5 years ago made a statement that I've never forgotten. He said, when I get up in the morning, before I roll over and crawl out of bed, I look up at the ceiling and I say, God, if I have to make a mistake today, may it be out there and not in here with the ones I love the most. I have never forgotten that. May my mistakes be out there and not in here. And yet, men, I say to the men in here, sometimes we come home and it's like, I've got to have a place to let my hair down. And we explode on our families and more often than not, on our spouses. Ever find yourself responding to your wife out of your day? And she suddenly takes the brunt of it. I've so often said we so often reserve our worst behavior for the best people in the whole world in our lives. And I think that's wrong. I think that's tragedy when we do that. And it's very hurtful. And it just isn't the men that do that. There are women who would not talk to their best friend the way they talk to their husband. Their best friend outside of their marriage, the way they would talk to their husband. And yet we do it, I think often, tongue in cheek, like, well, we're family. That may be the tragedy of our era. See, I think those are the people that get cut the most. You know, I can clobber a friend. I can find a new friend. I mean, I can. The guy walks out and says, that guy's nuts. You know, I feel badly, but I can find a new friend. I don't have any intention of finding a new wife. And I think because of that, I need some extra protection there within the structure of that marriage. Now, with all of that, and you go, holy cow, we're in trouble. Let me read you these verses from Ephesians 4. And I want us to just take these and kind of tear them apart for a few minutes. I'm going to read it, we'll pray together, and then we're going to look at this, okay? Let me begin at verse 25 with a very familiar passage of Scripture if you've been around the Christian faith for a period of time. Probably Ephesians is one of the big books that gets studied a lot, so you tend to be a little more familiar. Beginning at verse 25 in Ephesians 4. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth. Each one of you, and I'm going to change just one word in this passage. each one of you with his, my Bible says, neighbor. Your translation might say friend, brother or sister. Let's just, for our thinking for these next few minutes, change the word to spouse for this passage. Therefore, lay aside falsehood. Speak truth, each one of you, with his or her spouse, for we are members one of another. If that is true of our neighbors, how much more true it is of our marital relationship, our marriage. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity or that kind of an opportunity. Let him who steals, steal no longer, but rather let him labor, performing with his own hands what is good, in order that he may have something to share with him who has a need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Then in verse 31, let bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, slander be put away along with malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has forgiven you. Let's say we're going to pray together, and we're just going to try to tear this apart and take a look at it. God, thanks for this portion of Scripture. And as we take it in a little different context in these next moments and talk about our marriages, talk about that one who is sitting beside us this morning who is so special to our lives. May it just enhance our marriage if our marriage is good. I'm sure there are those here struggling and having difficulty in their marriages right now. I pray that somehow you would dig into their lives a bit and help them to get some things repaired and cared for. For those that maybe are in deep trauma, may it be a time of hope as we look at some of the things that tend to draw us together rather than push us apart. We thank you for what you say in this passage that you've given us for the church, for our neighbors, for our friends, but certainly most of all, for those that we live with, that we call husband or wife. And we'll thank you for what you do in these moments, in Christ's name. Amen. Let me begin with that 25th verse. Therefore, lay aside falsehood. Speak truth, each one of you, with his spouse, or with her spouse, for we are members one of another. Probably one of the most critical things we have in our marriage is honesty. I am counseling two marriages now where there has been dishonesty in the marriage. One partner or the other has done something, failed to reveal that, and now, a year and a half down the road, they are attempting to recover. But I want to tell you something. Once you begin to live in a falsehood, it is tremendously difficult to recover from that. There is a trust level that we must maintain if we're going to have a good marriage. Think about if you've been married any length of time. How many of you here have been married more than 5 years? Let me see your hands. How many more than 10? More than 15? More than 20? How many less than 5? Ooh, lots. How many less than 2? Quite a few. Anybody less than a year? But let me suggest to those of you who have been married less than 5 years, it takes at least that long to find out what it's all about. So don't bail out in the first 5, okay? That's the greatest tragedy of marriage. That's where the big things all happen in those first 5 years. And you're just learning what it's all about. So hang in there, okay? Honesty is critical. I believe if Carol and I, if somebody handed us just a set of 20 questions today that had to do with some of the intimate parts of our relationship, not just the sexual part, but the whole intimacy of our relationship, and ask us to go off to separate pews and sit down and write the answers to those, I believe that our answers on at least 18 of the 20 would match. I just think we know each other that well. I think we trust each other that much. I think we're that committed. My wife is at home. She's going to be with a whole group of people today. I am not up here at Hume Lake thinking in my mind, boy, I hope she doesn't see some guy there that she likes. I don't think Carol's at home somewhere, and I used to spend huge amounts of time on the road by myself and be gone 14, 15 days at a shot. I don't think Carol ever sat around the house saying, boy, I hope he doesn't meet some chick in a hotel in Denver, you know. Somehow there is a commitment to what we have that goes a little bit beyond that. I want to tell you something. You guys work in a profession with 24-hour cycles where a lot of things can begin to happen in conversation and fantasy that can lead to great destructiveness in a marriage. Truth and trust are the things that are critical to what make up the relationships that we have with one another. And it's amazing. Do you know that when you look at statistics today, that the great percentage of divorces happened in the first 5 years, the second greatest percentage of divorces happened in the second 20 years. Isn't that interesting? After the kids are raised and gone. See, tells you something. Probably they didn't have a good marriage for the last 10 years they were together. They were hanging in for the kids. And all of a sudden, many of you, I'm sure, have had friends who at 45 years of age were going through now what we call midlife crisis. I've been there and gone. You know, it's kind of a funny thing. The guy who wrote that book, Men in Midlife Crisis, is a close friend of mine, and I told him, I said, I think you started something. I don't think anybody knew they had one until you wrote about it. And then all of a sudden, everybody had one. Like, everybody has a midlife, you know, and suddenly we do weird stuff. You know, the guy who's been driving a four-door Chevy for 20 years goes out and buys an RX-7. And everybody says, oh, he's in midlife crisis. Well, I don't know. Maybe he's just wealthy and he likes sports cars. I don't have any idea. But suddenly, that's midlife crisis, you know. He's doing weird stuff. What happens in there? What creates all of that? Somehow, we've got to have trust and truthfulness. And he's saying to us, speak truth. Lay aside falsehood. Don't get involved in deceiving one another, even in little things. Because little things will lead to bigger things. And deception. You know something? A guy said to me a long time ago when I first started the ministry, he said, Craney, remember one thing. If you always tell the truth, you never have to remember what you said. It's a great statement. If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember when you get ready to tell the next thing. Now, what did I say back there? Because you spoke the truth, and it's just going to be truth again. But I'll guarantee you there are people sitting in this room that have lied, and you've told at least 10 more to cover that one. And I want to tell you, after about 100 of those, it gets very confusing. And at some point, you get caught. But I want to tell you something else. God knew when you told the first one, you were in trouble. You knew right off the bat you were in trouble. See? Get away from falsehood. Speak the truth. Chuck Swindoll made a statement that I will never forget. He's made it on the radio, and I heard him make it at Forest Home. And I'd never thought about it in this way, but it's a great statement. Lying, falsehoods, lying, and true intimacy can never coexist. Now, that's a great statement. Lying and true intimacy can never coexist. Doesn't mean you can't have sex and enjoy it. But true intimacy, the intimacy that puts two people into a marital relationship and draws them together, cannot coincide with people who do not tell the truth. It just doesn't work. There's guilt. There's all kinds of stuff. And true intimacy and falsehood doesn't go together. And if you're faking it, you ain't making it. It's that simple. See? You can fake it here and there. But that's critical. And that's what he says. Lay aside falsehood, speak the truth. Each one of you with his neighbor. Doesn't it seem sensible to all of us that if we're to do it with our neighbors, how much more critical it is within the structure of our own household? That we would be honest people. Little statement that I used to have taped in the pencil tray of my desk drawer. It came from my university days, and it was over a blackboard in a room where I had a class. And I looked at it for one whole semester. And it said this, never sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the immediate. It's a great statement. Put it on your refrigerator door. Never sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the immediate. Many a marriage has gone down the pipe because someone sacrificed all that they had for some pleasurable thing that seemed important for a moment. See, you don't sacrifice those permanent things that are the investment of your life for an immediate pleasure that lasts very briefly and often creates a lot of guilt. Never sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the immediate. Write it down somewhere and put it up where you have to look at it every day. It'll slow you down when you start to make a decision to think it through. Any decision. And certainly any decision to be somehow dishonest within the structure of that intimate, keen relationship that you have with your spouse. Now, second thing he talks about. Be angry and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath or on your anger. And do not give the devil this kind of an opportunity. Now, he does not say, don't get angry. That'd be tough. You know, most of us get a little uptight once in a while. Now, some of you are married probably to someone who never gets mad. But not many of you. Most of you, if the right button's pushed, you get a little hostile. Now, lots of things happen in hostility. My wife cries when she gets upset. I just get quiet. I get a book and go sit down under the lamp. I don't speak to anybody for about 3 days. You know, I just kind of sit and, you know, I just kind of go inside and I go sit down somewhere and I read. Carol comes in and asks me a question trying to repair the thing and I grunt. I don't answer, I just grunt. And she knows we're in trouble. Anger's a funny thing, isn't it? And you know, it's interesting. He doesn't say don't get mad. He doesn't say it's wrong to get upset. He doesn't say it's wrong to have a conflict. He didn't say that at all. He says be angry and don't sin. And then he goes on and says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. He's saying get it repaired quickly. If you're hot at one another about something, get that sucker solved. Get it repaired. Now let me remind you that when we went into marriage, all of us, I read a little thing from Cecil Osborne that I think is really good. Cecil Osborne says, when wives go into marriage, they are seeking a very mature man. And most of you lost that in the first week. You just went, you know, this is maturity. A very mature man with keen understanding who will know what she wants before she asks, who will know what she means when she says, and he says, what's wrong? And she says, nothing. Wants a man who is strong, passionate, gentle, and that she calls husband. There aren't any of those girls. I just want you to know that. There are some who fit a category or two, but there probably aren't any of those. Now listen to what the guy's looking for. This is intense. Husbands want an all-forgiving, ever-loving, understanding wife, mother, mistress, combination of a mother giving unconditional love, a movie star housekeeper, a sounding board, an ego builder, one who thinks his utterances are either profound or at least very witty. See, now that's what a guy's looking for, girls, and some of you look great, but you probably don't fit all of that. Probably somewhere in there you don't make it all. You know what love is in marriage? The thing that is real love, not, you know, love is a kind of a dumb word. Unfortunately, we don't have any better way to express what we're talking about. And I think it's terribly important in the English language. I love my dog and I love my wife. You know, I pray to God that's not the same thing. See? I heard someone say last night in the dining room, I love to make these Sundays. Well, you know, we have that word that we use in all kinds of ways. But do you know what marital love is? Marital love is what fills in the gaps between the idealistic expectation before you're married and the reality of what marriage is when you're in it. Because that's very different. And what fills in that gap is what we call love. That's what we call being bonded to one another. And that's a keen thing. Osborne says, you're never going to find that, so settle into what you have and make it work. See? And out of that, there is frustration. And out of that, sometimes there is anger. How do we handle our anger? Develop constructive ways to handle anger in your marriage. Hopefully, you're good talkers. When I counsel kids before they get married, one of the things that I recommend to them is that they set a scheduled talk time every day. And they look at you like you're nuts. I said, I want you to discover something. After you're married, you're not going to talk like you did before you were married. I'll guarantee you won't. You go in a restaurant and look around the restaurant and you can spot every married couple in the restaurant. They're all either eating or looking out windows or at lights. Look at all the people that are not married. They are in intense conversation over their tables. And the longer they've been married, the less they talk sitting in a restaurant. Now, something happens in there. Something goes awry. And one of the things I said is schedule a time every day when you know you're together, a meal or whatever, when after that meal you can have some time, when you can sit and talk. They said, what are we talking about? I said, anything. Well, if you don't have anything major to talk about fun things. Talk about minor things. Talk about cute things. But I said, I want to tell you something. If you develop that, when you hit a problem, you'll be able to talk about it. Most of the couples I counsel cannot talk, even with me in the room refereeing. They can't talk. They either yell, they get angry, they shut up. And that's with me there negotiating. Imagine what it's like when they're alone. That's why they're in my office. See, they don't communicate. Constructive ways to handle our anger. Mature people, I'm convinced mature marriages tend to get angry less and less. I do not get angry like I used to. I do not get frustrated with my wife like I used to. I still get frustrated with her sometimes, and she gets frustrated with me sometimes. But nothing like in the early years when we get very frustrated with little things that would happen. You begin to develop a relationship. I think probably the one of the toughest things, he says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. One of the little things that we did when we got engaged and when we were getting married, we promised each other that we would never go to bed angry. We married 28 years, and I'd love to stand here and say, we have never in 28 years gone to bed angry. That is not true. I think I could count on two hands the times we've gone to bed angry. You ever had this happen? We've had a hassle earlier in the evening. Comes time for bed. Carol kind of heads for the bathroom to get ready for bed. I know what she's doing. I immediately go to bed quicker than she does. I get in the bed. I turn my back to her side of the bed and get as close to my side of the bed as I can. We've got a king-size waterbed, biggie. So I can get about a quarter of a mile away. That's a big sucker. She comes in. She crawls in bed. And very often my wife will reach over and touch my shoulder just to see what kind of reaction she's going to get. If she gets nothing, everything just kind of settles into silence. And I'm like, you ever had this experience? I'm lying there thinking, if I just said, I'm sorry, or, hey, babe, it was dumb, I'm sorry. I mean, it would take 2 seconds, and it'd be over. Just like that, it'd be over. And the makeup would be wonderful. Not this kid. You ever wake up in the morning after one of those and in your mind you can hardly remember what the hassle was over and you feel really stupid? I have on more than one occasion in the morning gotten a hold of Carol and pulled her over and said, babe, it was dumb and I'm sorry. And it's okay, but wouldn't it have been so much better to do that last night? Isn't that funny? He says, be angry, say that. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. He says it wonderful. Just don't let that happen. Get him over with in that day. Then he goes on and makes one more statement that is critical. Don't give the devil that kind of a foothold in your life. Let me tell you, long-term anger creates affairs. If your hubby cannot get things straightened out at home, he'll find someplace else to get strokes. There'll be somebody at work or somewhere else who thinks he's not too bad. That's what creates that kind of thing. Same thing the other way around. A woman will go out who's been kind of downtrodden in the home. She suddenly goes out to work, and some guy there suddenly thinks she's wonderful. Well, it's been a long time since you said she was wonderful. And all of a sudden, we've got a big... And he knows that. He said, hey, don't give the devil a foothold in anger. Boy, he'll chuck something in there that'll make an awful mess of a long-term relationship you've worked awfully hard on. And most long-term anger comes out of selfishness. On the part of one or the other, or both. That's what most long-term anger is over. It's selfishness. It's me, I'm going to get more money. Do you ever lay there and think, now if she says she's sorry, I'll make up. Let me tell you, I've been through that. Don't let the devil get in there. Then I just say one other thing. One of the things that happens in anger, and most of you are aware of this, we tend to get destructive. If anger goes any length of time in our marriages, we get very destructive. We get sarcastic. We get verbally abusive. We pull up old problems. And in our society today, one of our great tragedies happening in our society right now is physical abuse. I want to tell you something. I cannot, my mind does not compute ever doing anything physical to my wife. To hit her or hurt her or shake her or, my mind doesn't even compute that. I grew up in a home where if my father would ever touch my mother, I'd have died right on the floor. I mean, that just didn't happen, and that just doesn't compute in my mind. And when I see people who do this, I am so frustrated and puzzled and angry. I get very ticked about that. But that's what happens. That comes out of a prolonged anger. That's what begins to happen. I just say to you, hey, agree to disagree. He who hits is non-creative and has run out of ideas. There's nothing creative going on at all. And so he does something physically abusive. Agree to disagree. Make room for one another. Let me just share with you. Carol and I have very different likes and dislikes. When we got married, I still am, but not like I used to be. I was an absolute sports freak. I knew everybody who played everything, anywhere, at any time for the last 50 years. And I watched everything that was available. I went to everything that was available. I was just a total sports nut. My wife thought sports were nice, but it was not that kind of a thing. My wife is into classical music. Well, as I said earlier, I like our home private. When I go home, I'm very content if there's nobody there but the two of us. When our boys were younger, if it's the two boys and Carolyn, I am very content. My wife loves 30 people at the house for dinner. She loves to entertain. I'm an only child. Never often had to say, I'm sorry. My wife comes from a family of 5 kids. She said, I'm sorry, at least 5 times a day just for survival. We're two very different people in many, many ways. I've learned to enjoy music. Some of her music. No, I've enjoyed taking her to some concerts and things where we've had a wonderful time, and I even enjoy hearing classical music, and I used to despise it. Carol is a football freak. I mean, she loves to go to football games. She understands the game better than a lot of guys I go to football games with. And she learned that for survival. She just decided she's going to be married to me. She better understand the game. And so she set about to do that and now enjoys it. We entertain a good bit in our home because I know she likes that. She tends in the summer when my schedule is very, very hectic to keep our home terribly private because she knows I need that time when I'm off. Those are concessions you make. And you don't get hostile at one another over it. Probably the biggest single argument my wife and I ever had was about 8 years ago over her working at the hospital. My wife's a registered nurse and she works just part-time a couple of days a week. And we got into a hassle over her work. And it was really nice to have the money, but I always wanted her available when I wanted to do something. And one morning, I got really mad at the table, and I just exploded on her. I've never forgotten that. Probably the worst I've ever talked to her in all of our marriage. And I did it with a lot of class. I mean, I didn't just start screaming and yelling and doing weird things. I just kind of very systematically cut right to the core of the issue and just chewed her up in little pieces and dropped her on the floor. And did it very articulately. And when I got all done, I'll never forget it. She sat across the table from me, and she never made a sound, and the tears began to just run. I mean, they didn't just a little tear trickle out to kind of say, I'm hurt. I mean, they just started running. And all of a sudden, as I sat there, I really became aware that I had just cut her heart out. And I was so intense that I just got up and went out and got in my car and went to the office. And left her sitting at the table. I got to the office. I'd been there about an hour. I can't even tell. I went to the door, and I shut the door of my office, and I sat at my desk, and I just cried for about 20 minutes. And I picked up the phone, and I called her. And I started to apologize. And my wife said on the phone, honey, you're forgiven. I love you. And then this intense voice came over the phone. Don't ever. Don't ever do that to me again. I cannot handle it. When I hung up that day, that transformed a whole segment of my mind on how I think, how I react, how I function. And Carol, we were talking the other night when I got in this little romantic mood in Pennsylvania. We were talking about, and Carol said to me, she said, honey, you know, since that time, it's been 8 or 9 years ago, she said, you have never, ever talked to me like that since. Thank you. Those are hurtful things. How do you handle your anger? How do you handle hostility when you get into it? Do you get it settled in a day? Do you get it settled before you go to bed? If you've got any long-term anger going on right now, I suggest today as you walk and talk after this session, confess it to one another. Get it out. because it's the greatest place in the world for the devil to get a little tack in there and hurt you deeply. Let him, verse 28, let him who steals, steal no longer, but rather, and let's say, let them perform with their own hands what is good in order that they may give something or share something that those who have a need. I just put down, let that one who steals, steal no more. I wrote down four things that I think we steal in marriages. One thing that it's terribly easy to steal is time. You guys' schedules are a little different, but I just, on an average, I would say the average guy works 40 to 50 hours a week if he's smart. There's some who work 80, but that's their problem. But 40 to 50 hours a week, 10 hours, let's say, driving to and from, 56 hours of sleep, that leaves approximately 52 hours in every week. How much of that does your spouse get directly? A lot of you have little children. You have to protect husband and wife time when you have little kids, because they'll take it all. They'll take it all. You go through that period from the time they're about born to about 16, then you can't find them anymore. But you go through that period when they tend to take a huge segment of your time. And if you don't protect each other's time and time for each other, you'll find out that very soon all the love transfers are made to the kids. That's why people get divorced after the kids leave. They've done all the love transfers. Mama's love now is all on the kids, and there's very little left for hubby at all. She's giving, 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 and it's all for them. Even husband's transfer. What do you protect out of that 52 hours? So you guys are on kind of weird schedules. A lot of you. I don't know about you guys, but I got a fireman living across from me. It works in Orange County. And I just know he's got on 24, off 24, on 24, off 24. Then he comes to this off 4 days or something. I mean, I accuse him constantly of being home all the time. And we've had a lot of fun. Great guy. But you have an odd schedule versus people who work a 40-hour week and so forth. So you've got these chunks of time. That can be good and that can be bad. Your wife can just wish you'd get out of the house. I mean, you know, you're home for 24 hours, she's trying to get stuff done, and you're there. You know, it's like, what's she doing? And you're not doing what she wishes you were doing. And that can bug her. So you've got a whole built-in set of things that are a little bit different. But nevertheless, you've got approximately 52 hours. How much of that belongs to your spouse? And I ask that both directions. I'm confident there are women in here that plan schedules to be gone when hubby's home. And you know you're doing it when you do it. And you know it's going to bug him when you do it. But you do it to kind of say, I'm in control. I'll show him. I'll do it. And he'll blow up, and it'll be okay, because he'll go. He didn't run me. I'll tell you, once we get into that, we're in trouble, folks. Because he'll do something to say, you want to bet? Second thing that I wrote down, and maybe one of the two of my four I think are critical. This one is very important, I think. Individuality is something we can steal. My wife's not here. I wouldn't say this if she were, but, well, only because she gets embarrassed. My wife, as an RN, works a couple of days a week at the hospital. She is the president of our district PTA and very active in our community. She is the chairman of the Drug Abuse Council in our county. She teaches Sunday school class. She is in choir. She is on the missionary board at our church. And you think of all of that and you think, that's ridiculous. And I've said that. But I want to tell you something. She is a great wife to me, and she has been a great mom to our kids. And she just tends to be very organized. I just kind of, hey, maybe here we go, you know. And my wife tends to be very, very organized. And she can do a lot of things. And I think probably the greatest disservice I could ever do to Carol is to suddenly say to her, I want you home. I would destroy her. My wife is not a home person. She went through a lot of home time when our kids were little. She loves people. She loves the community. She loves to be involved in the community. My wife is far better known in our community than I am. I am Carol Cranine's husband. She is far better known because of all of the community activities she has been involved in over the last several years. But that's her life. She loves that. Keeps a good house, but loves to be out there doing it. Probably the greatest disservice I could do is suddenly to try to cramp all that down. And yet I counsel husband constantly who say, My wife's place is in our home. I'll make that. I'll do that. You know, I want her home. We've got to give each other space to exist and to function, to do the things that God has given us some creativity to do. Third thing I wrote down is money. I'm counseling a couple right now that are in so much trouble financially, I cannot believe it. They've been married 4 years, and he came to me and he said, I've got to get another job. I need help. I need to be counseled. He said, my company does not pay me enough. We go behind every month. And I just casually said, what do you make? And when he told me, I'm going, I mean, he's a little above the poverty line. I mean, like up there. And I'm thinking, how can this be? I said, well, you know, there are two ways to solve it. One is to reduce expenses. The other is to get more wages. I mean, you know, and either one of those will work. So I just said, why don't you, the next time you come in, bring all of the payments monthly that you have. I just want to see what you're putting out every month. He brought this stuff, and I could not believe it. I absolutely could not believe it. He is a victim. He's a young guy, and he and his wife, and they're neat people. They are a victim of the plastic generation. They have gone out and bought everything under the sun. They've got stuff my wife and I didn't own until we've been married 20 years. And they bought it all on time. Their payments per month are incredible. And they can't make it. I said, what if you sold this and this and this and this and this? Would that help? It'd free up about $600 a month. And we begin to talk about all of this. And it's become a trauma in their marriage, and she has filed for divorce. And 90% of it is over money. My wife and I had a little thing when we got married that we would never spend over X amount. If I told you the amount, you'd laugh now because things have changed so much. But we agreed that we would never spend, either one of us, over X amount until we both agreed that that was right. And I want to tell you, we've kept that all through our marriage, and it saved us a lot. We have bought some stupid stuff. But we agreed, and when it turned out to be stupid... But when it turned out to be stupid, we could laugh. It wasn't me saying, see what you caused? Or it wasn't her saying, if you wouldn't have bought that, we wouldn't be in this mess. And that's what happens. See? Money. And then the fourth one, and maybe the most important, that we don't steal trust. I know things about my wife that nobody in this world knows. She knows things about me that nobody in this world knows but her. We know things together that nobody in this world knows but us. I want to tell you something. Those things belong to us. You ever been at a dinner table in somebody's home when a husband, usually, occasionally a wife, but more often a husband, will throw out some little intimate comment about a spouse? And you're so embarrassed over what was said, you just want to get up and walk out of that house. Because you know that somehow that person has to be deeply hurt that this one who knew this intimate thing about this person said it in front of 3 or 4 or 5 of you. That'll cut in a way that you'll never repair. There are things we know about each other, and folks, those are ours. And it's none of your business. And never will be. And that's a place where we steal in a way that is destructive. Steal trust. Those things are not for public consumption. And at some little party, when you're feeling a little frisky, guys, it's not the time to throw out a little shot that is one of those private things that belongs to a marriage and to no one else. And boy, I encourage you in that area, because that's a biggie. All right. Now, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment. And then listen, that it may give grace to those who hear it. Arrow. Words. Words are like missiles. Did you ever make a statement? Did you ever say something in a moment of frustration to your spouse? And as you say it, I mean, you hear it, you'd give anything you own if you could reach out and just pull it back. But it's gone. You know the kinds of things that are really hurtful in a marriage? Two words, always and never. You always. You never. I resent the fact that we never. I resent the fact that every time this, you always. One, it's not true, usually. And it's very, very hurtful. Words are like missiles. And words are destructive. You know what else is destructive? Looks. I can hurt Carol more with a look than with a word. My wife can make a major statement, and I can give her a look that says, that's stupid. I can just give her a look like, I can't believe you said that. And hurt her more than if I turned to her and said, I can't believe you said that. It's that look that conveys. Some of you have probably had one of those since you got here. Maybe at a table in the dining room. You made a little statement and your husband kind of went. Or your wife went. Like, I can't believe he told them that. And you know you're in trouble, don't you? Looks can be devastating in a marriage because we know each other so well. Remember when you were dating? Sometimes you'd say, what does that look mean? You don't have to ask that anymore, do you? See, you know what that look means. Let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth, but only a word that is good for edification. Harsh words tend to stick around. They tend to stick around. And then this thought, remember, and I say this to both husbands and wives, remember your mate, your husband, your wife is fragile in some areas. Now, I realize that firemen are macho, but I want to tell you something. I'll guarantee you, gals, if you've been married very long, you know some areas where your hubby is fragile. You know the button to push. You know where you can hurt him. And guys, it didn't take you long to find out where your wife is fragile. You can show me the toughest woman on earth. And I've seen some tough chickies, man. I've counseled some tough chickies. They're strong. Strong women. Headstrong women. But I've seen the fragile side of them come apart in a counseling session and cry uncontrollably for 30 minutes over something their husband said or did that has cut them deeply for 10 years and they've never been able to express it, and suddenly it all spills out and they just cry. Here's a woman who, if anybody saw her out there, they'd say, nah, but that's a gal who never cries. Oh yeah, your spouse is fragile. Words will break through that fragile glass and create hurts that stay around. Be careful what you say. You cannot get it back. You may try to repair it, but you cannot get it back. And then finally, he says, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, slander be put away along with all malice. Why? Be kind to one another. Be tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just like God has forgiven you. How quickly do you forgive? How well do you forgive? You know, the greatest lesson I ever learned about forgiveness in my life came from my father. When I was in high school, I wrecked my dad's new car. Had 618 miles on it. And I smashed it up pretty good. And I did it doing something he had told me never to do and doing something really stupid. I'll never forget sitting with my dad and trying to explain how sorry I was, because I felt absolutely awful, though it was absolutely ridiculous that it happened. And when I got all done, and when my dad got all done, and my dad said, well, son, you're going to have to help pay for this, and we talked about all of that. And then he came over, and I'll never forget it. He took me by the hand. He shook my hand. He said, son, I want you to know from your dad, you're forgiven. Do you know, from that day to this, and that's been a bundle of years, my father has never once ever brought that issue up. Never did he, when I did something else stupid, which I did a number of other things, never did he say, ah, here we go again, just like when you wrecked the car, same dumb thing. My father never did that. And my father taught me more about the forgiveness of God than I could ever learn if I read the Bible 1,000 times. My dad became my example of what forgiveness really is. See, we do not forget well. But if we honestly forgive and get turned and moving forward, we will begin to blur the past. But if we keep throwing things up, I've got a couple that I'm working with and have been for about 6 months, and he did some bad things. And they're at a point now where she says, I want the marriage and I want us to get back together, but she's not willing to make the move. And whenever I say to her, have you forgiven him? She'll say, yes, but. And I told her the other day, I said, you know, until you get the butt off of the yes, you're not going to make it. As long as it's yes, but, it isn't going to happen. Somewhere you got to bite the bullet. Somewhere you got to say he's forgiven. Somewhere you got to say, we're going at this thing. I want this and he wants it and we're going to do it. And you begin to walk and God begins in his mercy and grace to blur the past. We don't forget. We're not made up that way. God does. God says he removes it as far as east from west. He puts it in the deepest sea and remembers it no more. We don't do that well. Somebody ever wronged you bad and you didn't see him for 2 years? And then you saw him coming down the street? What's the first thing you thought of? Remember when that turkey did that? See, that's how we think. But I want to tell you something. When you really forgive, God begins to blur that out and gives you the ability to treat that person as though it never happened. Forgive, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Learn to forgive quickly. Don't dig up past failures. Don't get into something that happened a week ago or a month ago or 10 years ago. All it does is create problems. And then finally, I just say this. Keep the happy memories. You know something? About 2 years ago, I walked into my son's room, my oldest boy. He was moving out. And it was about 11 o'clock at night. I walked in his room. The room was empty, and I flipped the light on. And I stood there for a little while, and then I sat down, and I cried. But it wasn't sad tears. They were happy tears. As I looked around his room, because he hadn't cleaned it out yet, and I saw the pictures, things that he had bought and pasted on things and framed them, and they were all on his walls. I saw his shelves, about 3 of them, of trophies from his football, high school days and college days. And I sat in the room, and I thought about how sad it was that he was moving out. He wasn't going to be there anymore. And how special he had been in my life. But then I began to smile, and I began to think about the good times. And I went in and I got out a couple of picture albums, and my wife and I sat on the couch that night, and we flipped through a couple of our albums when we spent a week at Lake Powell, a week at Catalina Island on a vacation. You know what I noticed in that album? Every picture was a happy picture. There wasn't one picture in there where my wife got mad and I said, hold that pose, I want to take this picture and put it. I'll put that sucker in the album so we'll never forget how you look when you're angry. I could have died right on the spot. But as I looked through the album, I said, isn't it fun to look through albums? Because you got all the happy pictures. Great pictures of our little one just laughing his head off. I said, we took pictures of it. And we laughed because we could hear that little laugh going on as we sit and looked at the picture. That's what our lives need to be like. They need to be picture albums. God will blur the cruddy stuff if we're serious about the good stuff. And he just says, hey, forgive quickly. Get it out of your system. Get the picture album going again. Take some new pictures. Pictures that are happy. Pictures that are good times. Our marriages aren't all good times. There are struggles in every marriage, some more than others. But I want you to know something. It can be better than that if you choose to make it. Whatever you're living in right now, you created. Okay? And both sides of the relationship created it if you're having trouble. You know, you can sit there and blame your husband. You say, well, if he wouldn't have done this, we wouldn't be an awful mess. You know, you say, well, she was not such a... We wouldn't have. Hey, we're in this thing together, folks. Why not enjoy it? I want to tell you something. I'm looking forward to getting home tomorrow night. I know guys that never look forward to that. They go there when there's nowhere else to go. I'm looking forward to getting home. I just want to be with my wife. I do not enjoy traveling alone. I did that for several years. And rarely do I travel alone. And I miss that lady. She's a good lady. She is a huge, huge chunk of my life. And I love her deeply. I want to pray in a moment. We're going to be dismissed. I want you to do something. We got time before lunch. I want you to do something. I want you to go out. I don't care how long you've been married. Some of you have been married a year. Some of you have been married 35, 40 probably. I want you to do something. I want you to go out and I want you to take a walk. Don't get with anybody else. Now, if you made plans after this, tell them they're going to be delayed for about 15 minutes, okay? I just want you to take your spouse and I want you to walk. Just go out here and walk on the road or walk up in the trees or find a rock. Just walk for a little bit and do a couple of things. One, think of three things that you'd like to share with your spouse why he or she is really important to you in your life. Just three things. Could be big things, they could be just little things that are very special to you. And tell your spouse three reasons why they are really important to you in your life. Most of you gals won't have a lot of trouble with that. Some of you guys just be a little tough. You don't say those things well. Some of you, easy. The other guys here, it's a little tougher. And when you tell her, guys, look into her eyes. Don't look at the sky. Don't kick the dirt. Look into her eyes. Look her straight in the face. And tell her three things why she is really important to you. And gals, tell him three reasons why he's really important to you in your life. And then, if God has maybe touched you in an area this morning, tell that spouse one thing that you'd like to change, you'd like to alter a little bit. Maybe something really struck you this morning. You've got a cruddy habit. You've got something you do, and you know it's hurtful. You know every time you do it, it creates a problem. And that with her help and God's help and praying together, you're going to move 2 degrees. There used to be a great sign up on the Alaskan Highway, that one stretch of the road where it was awful. Huge sign. It said, pick your rut carefully. You'll be in it for the next 300 miles. I want to tell you something. In our marriages, we tend to be very rutted people. We tend to function in directions. You know something? Your marriage might get a whole new little twist to it if you could just move over one rut. That's all. That's just a couple of degrees. I mean, we're not talking about a 180. We're just talking about a couple of degrees. That'd be one thing that God really pinched you with this morning. Do you want to say to your spouse, hey, this is an area that I know it's bugged you. I'm going to work at this. And I want you to help me work at it. And I'm going to see if I can't alter this a little bit just to make our home a better place. Maybe it has something to do with the kids. Maybe it has something to do with your personal relationship. But I want you to do that and then do whatever you want to do. But take the time to walk a little bit and talk a little bit. Share those three good things and then share one thing that maybe God talked to you about. Father, thanks for this time. Help us to be aware of what you've told us in your book. And certainly if these pertain to our neighbors, they ought to pertain to our spouses. God, may what goes on behind the doors of our house when they're closed be an example to the world around us of what a Christian marriage is all about. It's easy to go out and put on an air. It's easy to be here and smile and everybody thinks everything's okay. But every one of us in this room know what's going on and how good or bad it is. God, help us to make it good. We control that. And help us to enjoy one another because you've given us to each other. Well, thank you for what you do just in these moments of talking to each other. Make it a good time and an encouraging time. And a time when we can maybe just hug and hold each other and say you're special in a special way. Thank you for a weekend like this to get away and think about these things in the name of Christ. Amen.
For additional copies of this tape or information on other tapes that would minister to you and your friends, write to Firefighters for Christ at the address on the back side of this tape.
Firefighters for Christ Tape Library is a ministry whose sole purpose is to distribute God's Word in the form of personal testimonies and Bible study teaching cassette tapes. Finally, brethren, pray for us that the Word of God may have free course and be glorified, even as it is with you.